I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
November is Epilepsy Awareness Month, and a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people, actually, that's going to be one of the themes of our conversation here, is the things that people don't know would shock you about something that is as prevalent as epilepsy. But joining us from the Epilepsy Foundation of Central and South Texas is Kimberly Martin. How are you today?
Hi, how are you? I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for joining us. As I said, November is Epilepsy Awareness Month, and you see the purple ribbons out there for lots of other things, but some of them actually represent epilepsy awareness, which is one of the most common neurological disorders that in the world, but it is also one of the least funded. It is one of the least spoken about. It is, we were talking about this just a moment ago before we started here, and that's that it's how epilepsy sort of gets compartmentalized in people's heads. It's just, kind of flopping on the ground like a fish out of water, and then it doesn't get thought about again. And there are actually numerous kinds of seizures. There are many different reasons why someone can have a seizure. It's the statistics on the amount of people that it's affected by are more than you would think. And that's why we have you on today, is to discuss a lot of those things.
Right. Yes, I'm glad to be here. And yes, you're right. It is actually more common than people think. As we like to say, it's the best kept secret. People don't like to talk about it. For one, because there's such a huge stigma attached to epilepsy. People back as far as you can, think about, people were stigmatized for having seizures and for having epilepsy. It was always awful. Often it was the misconception was that it was a problem with mental health, that they, had a lot of issues with that part of it, thinking it was mental health, and they would put them in asylums and things because they had seizures, which epilepsy and seizures are not a mental health problem. It actually is its own neurological disorder. And so I think that dispelling some of those myths, I think, are really crucial to the person living with epilepsy. They're able to then, thinking about some of those things, like one of the biggest misconceptions, that you can swallow your tongue, during a seizure. You cannot swallow your tongue. A person with epilepsy can never swallow their tongue during a seizure. And that's probably one of the biggest and most harmful misconceptions, because people think they should stick something in their mouth if they're having a seizure. And if anything, that actually can cause more problems and can break teeth. You can injure your tongue. You can injure your fingers if you try to stick your fingers in their mouth. So it's not recommended that you put anything in somebody's mouth when they're having a seizure. It's just, you can have strange behaviors with seizures. So people, not just our convulsive seizures, you hear, like you said, the convulsive seizures. That's what people commonly associate with epilepsy, but it's not the most common seizure. The most common seizure type isn't what they call focal seizure, which symptoms can be things like chewing movements and, rhythmic blinking and slight movements and just different things. They look like they're speaking gibberish or pulling at their clothes. These are things that can happen in a seizure, but people don't know that that's a seizure. So those are some of the misconceptions. There are others, just to kind of hit that out. But 1 in 26 people, just so that, our stats, 1 in 26 people will have epilepsy or seizure at some point in their lifetime. So that's a pretty high statistic. Chances are that someone, if you, are in a room with individuals, there's probably 1 or 2 people in that room that have had a seizure at some point in their lifetime. And so, it's really important that we get the information out there and that we don't keep it the best kept secret, because it's, if you know about the support that is out there, you have a better chance of, you know, living life to the fullest if you're a person living with epilepsy. You know that there are things out there to help.
I read that it is 1 in 9 people at some point in their life experience seizures or epilepsy of some sort.
And 1 in 26 will be diagnosed with epilepsy at some point in their lifetime. So yes, you're right. You're correct that you can have a seizure from many things. It can be not just from having epilepsy, but if you have what they call 2 or more unprovoked seizures, those are seizures that just happen. Like nothing is provoking you to have that seizure. You're just kind of sitting like you're sitting and all of a sudden you have a seizure. You know, without, there's nothing provoking it, meaning there's no infection, you're not sick, you know, there's not a head injury, something like that that's provoking it. But if you have 2 or more seizures like that, unprovoked is when they diagnose you with epilepsy at that point.
Well, I remember back when I was in high school, somebody who ended up actually being diagnosed with epilepsy down the line, he was having, you know, as I said, we, you know, most people just assume that a seizure is the convulsive type. So this poor kid was having seizures pretty regularly, but they were misdiagnosed as panic attacks. And so
that happens often, or ADHD, if they're staring off into space.
That's actually exactly what the other thing is he was doing exactly that. He had rapid movements. He was staring off into space. He was having trouble concentrating. He was, you know, he kept calling it time traveling, where he would just, you know, all of a sudden wake up and it's 5 minutes later and he doesn't know what happened. He didn't fall to the ground. He didn't, you know, there were no muscle spasms or anything like that, but he just, his face turned white and he kind of glazed over and he was gone for a little bit. And it wasn't until he was an adult that somebody, he went to a neurologist for something else.
It happens quite often. We hear that from patients all the time that they, when they go back and they look at, you know, they'll end up in the ER when they have that tonic-clonic convulsive seizure. But when they go back and look and they learn about epilepsy and the different seizure types, they can go back and pinpoint the time that their child probably was having seizures when the grades started to drop, when the teacher was saying they're not paying attention in class, when they were missing bits and pieces of information. And there are some seizure types where you can have hundreds and hundreds of these a day and not know that you're having them. They're just back to back to back. They can happen all the time. Absence seizures is what those are called. And so absence seizures, which are the ones that you were talking about, you can typically have like a rapid blinking eye movement, but they're so fast that sometimes you can't even see them because it can just last, you know, anywhere from 1 to 3 seconds. And the little bit longer they last, then that person typically will know that something was going on. But for the most part, they don't know. Like you said, they wake up in a fog. They're like, they feel like they time traveled. They don't know what happened. Where the last time I was doing this, that I can remember. And now all of a sudden I'm sitting over here with all these people looking at me. You know, it can be a little bit tough.
Yeah, he would say that he would get a, you know, talking to him as an adult, he would say that he would get a sense of deja vu out of nowhere, feel very nauseous, and then next thing he knows, he's, you know, coming back, and he's foggy and sick to his stomach, and, you know, it takes a minute to gather your wits, and you know, that's, unfortunately, it's one of those things where you sort of learn the behavior to a certain extent of trying to...
The behavior is very individualized. It's kind of knowing what that person's seizure may not look like somebody else's seizure. And I think that's where people can get a little bit confused and not sometimes can be misdiagnosed or not able to pinpoint what that seizure looks like until they kind of, you know, maybe a lot of times we'll take a video and take it to the doctor and doctor will look at it and say, well, that is part of the seizure. And they may not realize that that is part of the seizure. We see that a lot, unfortunately.
When he also would talk about the coming out of it, how he felt obligated to not have anybody feel bad because he was told they were panic attacks. So he took it very internalized. Yeah. And so he would, you know, I'm fine, you know, and instead of seeking out help after having, you know, I guess what would be the, you know, maybe that's a good question to ask you is that, you know, obviously your brain is misfiring neurons and is,
right.
is, you know, it has confused itself. What is the good phrasing for that? Obviously, you know, it's your, you know, I don't want to say your brain is going haywire or something like that because it sounds a little drastic and insulting, but what would be the good phrasing for, you know, referring to somebody having a seizure? What is that?
And that's typically what happens. Like you said, there's a misfire. It's an electrical storm. You can say that, electrical storm in their brain. And so once those neurons misfire, you can have, depending on where the misfire is in your brain. So say you have what they call focal seizures, which can just involve one part of the brain. And so the misfire may happen in just that one part. And it can start as a small seizure, which what they call it a focal aware seizure, or another common term used to be simple partial seizure. And what that is actually the aura. You know, you described it perfectly when you said he had a deja vu moment and had nausea. That was actually a small seizure that he was having. Just in, it was what they call focal aware seizure, because you're aware of what you're doing. You just have no control over it. And for a lot of people that have that as a seizure type, they actually are able to, when they feel that, they know that there's a chance. So if you think about that spot on the brain, as we talked about, that little focal spot that is seizing, and it may be a small, maybe it's a small area that you're just, they're just getting that sensation, like you said, the deja vu or nausea, a lot of people, different, you know, funky smell. We hear a lot of different things from people as to what they get as that, what that aura would be. But as that seizure continues to grow, it can involve more of the area still in that focal area. And then they become unaware and they have what they call focal unaware seizure. So a lot of times when they feel that coming on, they try, it's always a good key warning to get to somewhere where they're going to be safe, just to be a safe space, so that they know that if they go continue on with their seizure or let somebody know that they are feel like that they feel that way. Sometimes there's not a lot of time between when they feel that way and when they actually go into the unaware seizure. From there, so some people will continue to, some people have what they call a secondary, it's a big medical term, but it's a secondary generalization or secondary generalized tonic-clonic seizure. So it may go, so think about this, to go like the three steps. You have the one little step that is the aura, which is the very small area of your brain that's seizing and you're aware. And then it continues to grow a little bit bigger and then you become focal unaware, but not convulsing yet. And then from there, sometimes it can continue to grow and see the full tonic-clonic convulsive seizure. So there are many seizure types, as we kind of discussed earlier. And so, but knowing what those points are for that individual person, and like I said, it's very individualized, everybody's different. Knowing what those are can help you to better take control of your health as you, when you're around other people, so that you, if you are going to, if you do tend to go into that convulsive seizure, that you can get, you can lay on the floor or you can get in a safe spot so that you're not going to get injured if you fall. And so, or letting somebody know so they can come sit with you, so that that way, if you do feel that coming, if you do feel that aura and you know that it's going to probably continue to grow into a bigger seizure, that you, you know, have, take that time to stay, be in a safe location so that you don't get injured. At that point. But the way that you described it, kind of going back to that again, because I kind of went off track a little bit there, I can tend to do that. the way that you described it is correct. It is this firing of neurons. It is an electrical storm in your brain. Kind of one of the best ways to kind of describe it is that way, describing it as a storm.
While I was doing a little reading about it, I read about drop seizures. Now, those seem to be...
That's a type of seizure as well.
Yeah, those seem to be, you know, pretty scary, where you are, you know, 1 minute and the next minute you are, you know, and it seemed like there was very little warning when it came to those. And, you know, so correct. I wanted to just kind of talk about, you know, not, obviously not all of them, because there are some that are very, very, very specific, but, you know, to sort of generalize
so
what
drop
are
seizures, drop seizures are also called atonic seizures. And I don't know if you've heard that term, atonic. Atonic is just like a stiffening of the muscles. And so when you have a drop seizure, it's like you have that, you know, your muscle tone's normal tension. So when you go atonic, it means you lose that tone. So you're just like, all of a sudden you become limp and you just kind of fall over. And I've seen the ones I've seen, examples of this have been like the Nestle plunge. I've seen people go from standing to a complete fall backwards and hitting their head on the floor. People that have atonic seizures or drop attacks tend to have a lot of injuries, like a lot of facial injuries, a lot of head injuries, because they are, you know, they have that complete fall. They may just fall forward and, you know, if they're sitting at a desk or on a table, they'll hit their face on that. Or if they're standing, they often do fall to the ground. And it's a complete drop. So all of their muscles go limp at one time and they just fall.
And make no effort to catch themselves. There is no reflex.
Well, they can't right, because exactly. they're unconscious. They don't really know. And the seizures usually last only about 15 seconds. They're pretty short. But people that have atonic seizures, those are the ones that they always recommend that they wear some sort of helmet or protective gear, because typically they do have a lot of facial injuries, just because they're hitting their face all the time when they're falling, or the back of their head all the time when they're falling. And so, so that seizure type, it is recommended that they have a helmet, so that that way, that they wear a helmet to help prevent any additional injury from happening, from hitting their head.
Now, what are some other kinds of the more, you know, the more common kinds of seizures that people have?
So the most common kind that I talked about earlier is the focal unaware seizure, which is where they, you know, can pick their clothes. They have loss of awareness, but not loss of consciousness. These are the seizures that kind of tend to get people in trouble sometimes, because when you have a focal unaware seizure, sometimes they have a feeling of impending doom, right? They can have that feeling that they're kind of in that fight or flight stage, kind of, sort of, they can be. And so if you touch them, sometimes they can, you know, they can lash back out at you. They can hit you. If you are holding them down, they may thrash a little bit. But typically they can wander. They can pick their clothes. They can make noises and sounds that don't really make any sense. They have what they call automatisms. It's just that, like, lip smacking or dropping something and picking it up, the same thing, drop it, pick it up over and over again while they're in the seizure. You know, that, like I said, they can wander. Wandering is a big part of these, and they're very individualized, like with everybody else. So, you know, one person may do one thing, other may do something else. Sometimes they can have an eye roll back, and they sound like they're with you sometimes, because they may make noises like they're responding, but they really don't know what you're saying. And how these get people in trouble is that you have sometimes, if you go to, like, maybe they're wandering and a police officer comes up to them because maybe they've been reported because they just look strange. And so if a police officer tries to grab them or hold them, they'll lash back and hit the police officer. We do find or hear from families that their family member is in the back of a police car when they come out of their seizure because they hit a police officer. And most of the time they don't even know that they did that. It's just because they did it while they were within that seizure. And so it's very important that law enforcement get trained, that law enforcement know how to recognize a seizure and how to know if they're not getting the response from somebody to give it a second and watch them, because it could just be that they are in a seizure and they need that little bit of time to come out of it. So it is important. Training is super crucial, especially recognition, seizure recognition. So if you are working in a public service type of job like that, like a police officer or someone that is out working with the public, it's important to know what to look for and to know what to do to keep that person safe. You want to make sure that they are, you know, staying with them, that they're putting them on their side, that they know that basic first aid of what to do with somebody that's having a seizure. Because you don't always have to call 911. That's one big thing that's another misconception, that you have to call 911 the minute you see someone having a seizure. For most people, it's just a huge expense, because, you know, maybe it's a 1 minute seizure that kind of just stops on its own. And that person was not in an emergent situation. If the seizure lasts longer than 5 minutes, yes, you do call 911, because that could become an emergent situation. But for the most part, most seizures are just finished naturally. So in terms of types, I guess I kind of went off track a little bit there again. Sorry about that. I get so excited when I'm talking about it, not talking about seizures, but getting the opportunity to actually talk about epilepsy and what it is, so people have a better understanding. So episodic seizures are the others that I talked about. Those are what they call the staring spell seizures, where they can stare off into space. Their eyes may roll back a little bit. Their eyelids may flutter a little bit. They may look at you and while you're talking to them, and they just kind of do it. I'm sorry, what did you say? Like, because they missed a bit of your conversation, but you can't really tell that they had a seizure if they're in that conversation. So they'll just may ask you to repeat things that they missed, those bits and pieces of information that they missed. And then of course, there are other seizures. There are the, as we talked about, the tonic-clonic seizure. That's the convulsive seizure that you see, that you usually see somebody with that's already in a convulsive seizure or on the ground, usually convulsing. So that one, and I can talk more about that if you'd like to hear more about that. That seizure type. But those are the most common, the ones that you're probably going to see just out in general public. You may see the person wandering, you may see convulsive seizures, or maybe even the staring spells. There are others, as I said, a lot more. But those are the basic ones that you would probably see, more than likely see, when you're out in public.
We are talking to Kimberly Martin, the assistant director, she is also a certified cognitive coach and a licensed vocational nurse for the Epilepsy Foundation of Central and South Texas. And for the record, as a host, when someone is passionate about a cause, I am smart enough to get out of the way.
Wow.
So I will gladly, anytime you want to go on a rant about something that you are passionate about, something sure. like that, I will be smart enough to take a step back and shut up.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, that I get passionate about is being able to put the word out there about epilepsy, about us, that people know that we exist. that they know all the services that we provide. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with some of the things that we do, but if you're a person that has epilepsy and you don't have insurance, guess what? You could probably get seen in our clinic, because we have a clinic, for a free clinic for people with epilepsy in Central South Texas that may not have a physician that can help them. You know, we pay for medications, we pay for labs, EEGs, MRIs, things like that. We treat you. We actually get in to see what they call an epileptologist, which is not just your traditional neurologist, but this is your neurologist that actually studied epilepsy, and they're subspecialty neurologists. And so we have these neurologists that work with us in our clinic. And so for people that don't have insurance, this is like, it's carte blanche to be able to come in. Get in to see one of these doctors. And so you know, that's kind of one of the things, being able to talk about that, being able to talk about some of the other things that we do. You know, managing epilepsy is complex and frustrating for some people. You know, if you have seizures, you can't really work. Sometimes you can't go to school. You definitely can't drive. Or even, you know, sometimes social activities can be difficult. And so, you know, some of the things that we offer, support services, you know, we have support groups, obviously, throughout Central Texas, and when, you know, San Antonio, our groups are virtual. So people that are outside of Texas can even join these groups if they want. So we have our support groups. We also have a counselor that provides free mental health counseling if there's somebody that's in need of that. And one of my favorite things to talk about is self-management. And of course, I always feel like, you know, self-management, you know, doesn't mean that, you know, people manage their health alone. It actually is an active partnership between the person with the epilepsy, their family, friends, and their doctor. And, you know, you're looking at self-management as one way to kind of help, you know, help with your seizures, help with maybe lifestyle management. Maybe there's risky things that you're doing that can cause you to trigger a seizure. There are a lot of seizure triggers out there. And if you don't know what those are, you don't know to avoid them. And so, so when we, you know, for us, we run several self-management programs that help people with epilepsy take better control of their life. And that's where the, you know, you saw my cognitive coaching in there. I run a program called Hopscotch, which is a memory program, and it teaches people problem solving skills so that they're able to, and memory strategies so that they're able to better deal with some of the memory challenges they may be having from having seizures. And so, you know, we have lots of programs and services. We've got programs for kids, lots of programs. We have a summer camp. That's the best thing ever. I don't know if you ever did camp when you were a kid, you know, but summer camp is like one of the best experiences for any youth, right? Well, if you have seizures and epilepsy, sometimes traditional summer camps won't let you into their camp because you're on medications, or because, you know, it's a risk for them. Well, our camp, epilepsy is the norm. So for kids with epilepsy, guess what? You can come to summer camp. It's free for kids with epilepsy. We hold our summer camp. Yeah, it's a summer camp. It's held Monday through Friday camp. It's an overnight camp, so it's 5 days and 4 nights, and we have it in Rockport. We use Camp Aranzazu, which is a camp for people with disabilities, and so it's actually the everything there, the equipment and everything is accessible to all. And so so our summer camp that we have takes place in June. It's always in June, and I think our application process opens in February. So, you know, keep an eye on our website. If you have a child between the ages of 8 and 17 that you want to go to summer camp, you know, keep that in mind. And we, you know, definitely would love to have, you know, we have usually fill about 70 spots. That's about how many camper spots we have. And we're always looking for volunteers. So if you are college age and you need some service hours, guess what? You get 120 service hours just for coming to camp. And so, so kind of keep that in mind too. So we're always looking for volunteers that can come and help to do that. But camp is a wonderful experience. We hear from parents that test in their kids to camp for the first time, that it's just sometimes you know, I've seen a gentleman who has several children with epilepsy, unfortunately, but when he comes to pick up his kids from camp, the look on his face and the heaving he has, just because he's so overwhelmed with emotion to see his kids and how they are after they've been through summer camp. It's just, it's one of those things that, you know, it's life-changing for people with epilepsy. And so, for kids especially. And so we have kids that have become best friends, and now they're doing young adult retreats together because they did camp together for so long. And so, it's one of our programs that I think is very helpful for kids with epilepsy, especially those that are trying to just, you know, meet other people like them. And, you know, in school, it's a little bit hard to do that, you know, and knowing somebody that goes through some of the same things that you go through is really helpful.
I would imagine that probably has a lot to do with it, is the feeling of normalcy, being around people, exactly, that know the ins and outs of the problems that you have makes it not a big deal. When you're one of one, it's a big deal. When you're one of many, right. It's not. And so if you'd like more information on that camp or anything else, go to EFCST.org. That's Epilepsy Foundation of Central and South Texas.org.
Correct. And our camp is called Camp Brainstorm. So you can actually go to campbrainstorm.org as well. And you can find more information there about summer camp. So on top of information about EFCST.org.
I wanted to talk about something really quick. You said something earlier about triggers, but then I also wanted to talk about the first aid and the, you know, what the do's and don'ts when someone is having a seizure and it's being recognized. You know, this is the part that exactly as you said in the beginning of things, people will try and stick a wallet in your mouth or you know, a pen or something like that when you're having a seizure, which, as you said, can cause damage to your jaw, your teeth, but you also might swallow something. And, you know, there are lots of misconceptions when it comes to restrain the person. You know, a lot of people think you need to restrain the person and, you know, one, that's a good way to hurt them, but also seems like that's a good way to get hurt also. You know, what are the do's and don'ts when it comes to seizure first aid, but also what are the triggers that lead someone to have a seizure?
So two very important topics, actually. So I'm going to tackle the first aid one first, because I think that is really important. So we at the Epilepsy Foundation have what we like to call stay safe side. And so it's three ways to remember it. So stay with the person until they're awake and alert. Keep the person safe. Move them away from anything. Guide or move them away from anything that's harmful. And number three is side. So if the person is not awake and aware, you want to make sure that you turn them on their side. So you keep their airway clear. You loosen anything that's tied around their neck, and you put something smaller, soft into their head. And if you don't have anything like a jacket or a pillow or something, you can even just cradle their head with your hand. So they're not going to hurt you, but it keeps them from hitting their head while they're seizing. So three big things, stay safe side. If they can just remember that, those three things, I think, you know, it will help somebody with epilepsy. One of the biggest and most important things too is to time that seizure. Because if you don't know how long the seizure lasts, you're not going to have a point of when it is to considered an emergency. So if you see the seizure start, if you walk up and somebody is having a seizure, then you time it. You start timing it, kind of look at your watch and see what time it is. And if you're hitting the 5-minute mark and they're still convulsing, then you need to call EMS at that point, because at that point it becomes an emergency. Other times that it's an emergency is if it's a first time seizure, or if someone is pregnant, or if they have a seizure in water. So those are all things that could be considered emergent. Or if they have another seizure before they fully come out of their seizure. So if they have a seizure and then they're in that recovery phase, and then they have another seizure before they're fully awake and alert, that is actually an emergent situation. And so those are three things to kind of watch out for in terms of emergency. And then, but really just stay safe side. So stay with them until they're awake and alert, keep them safe from harm, and then turn them on their side so that they don't aspirate or choke as they're, you know, they have a lot of saliva sometimes that's coming out of their mouth. And so that helps to do that. You know, do not restrain, as you said, or put anything in their mouth. And if you know them and you know that they have a rescue medication, make sure that you're aware. There is a thing that they call seizure action plans. And so if you're working in an environment with someone that has epilepsy or in a school setting, they typically will already have a seizure action plan in place. So schools and people and that aspect will know what to do with a person if they have a seizure. If they have a rescue med with them, if you know them, sometimes it's kind of hard. Rescue meds are a little bit, you know, can be difficult if you don't know how to use them and stuff like that. But for the most part, if you know the person and you know how to administer a rescue med, give it to them when you can. So that's really important to keep them from going into an emergent situation. So that's it with the first aid. It's very simple. We do offer seizure first aid certification training. So actually can get seizure first aid certified. It's an hour and a half course that can be done on demand, or you can do it live with one of our staff. We can actually go out to any facility or anywhere. It's free of charge. And we come out there and train all of your staff, or train people. If you have, you know, you have staff members that have epilepsy and you want everybody to be trained so they know how to react, then definitely, you know, give us a call. We can come out and do that. So the first aid is very, very important, and knowing appropriate first aid, not to put anything in their mouth, is very, very important as well. So,
now, about the triggers?
The triggers. So the triggers, there's some commonly reported triggers. One of the most common, of course, stress is very common, is a common trigger. But one of the biggest ones, well, two of the biggest, one of them is missed or late medications. So somebody doesn't take their medication the way that it's prescribed, or they take it like super late and they had too much time in between doses, that can actually trigger a seizure. sleep deprivation, so not sleeping well, not getting enough sleep, having disrupted sleep, that can also cause you to it can trigger a seizure as well. Being sick, so if you're ill, with or without fever, just being sick lowers your threshold, your seizure threshold. That's your body's ability to fight off that seizure. And so being sick can actually lower that, and you can actually have a breakthrough seizure when you're sick. For some people that have photosensitive epilepsy, flashing lights or patterns can sometimes trigger a seizure. And that's not just flashing lights like strobe lights, but it could be some things people don't think about is if you're in a car and you're driving and the sun is shining through trees and you're just kind of seeing the flicker of the trees from you know, your peripheral vision as you're driving, sometimes that can actually trigger a seizure for some people. Or having water, the glare that's reflecting off of water. So like if you're in a pool, that glare that's reflecting off the water can sometimes trigger a seizure for some as well. And so for those situations, obviously, if you're in water, you never want to be in water alone. You want to have somebody in there with you. But we have you, if you're photosensitive, they recommend that you wear, that you have the polarized sunglasses. So that kind of helps to block some of that glare a little bit. The other things that can trigger seizures, alcohol. So alcohol use can trigger a seizure. So, you know, unfortunately, our college kids, you know, like to have a lot of fun, and sometimes they tend to over have fun, and then they have seizures. They can have a seizure because of the alcohol use. Menstrual cycle hormonal changes is really important, especially in girls. There's a seizure type that can occur when young girls are starting to become adolescents, and they're like 13, 14 years old, and they, you know, they can have a seizure that estrogen itself can be a proconvulsant, which means that they can cause you to have a seizure sometimes in some young women. And so, you know, keeping a paired calendar and a seizure calendar on the same calendar so you can see if there is any correlation between the two is really useful and helpful to know whether hormones are playing a part. Dehydration and heat can also be a trigger. So if it's if you get a little dehydrated because it's very hot outside, heat is a known seizure trigger. And so as dehydration, so both of those are not eating well or going long times without eating can sometimes as well trigger a seizure. That's been reported as well. Use of certain medications, like over-the-counter medications. There are some over-the-counter medications that can cause problems. There's a whole list of them, but one of the ones that sticks out is what they call diphenhydramine, which is just in your general Benadryl. It's in a lot of cold medicines and stuff. And so that medication has been known to trigger seizures because it lowers that threshold again. There are prescription medications as well that can cause problems with breakthrough seizures because it lowers the threshold as some of the antidepressants as well. So those are the main triggers that we see. There are some other triggers that you have that are kind of very, they're a little more rare. There's what they call musicogenic epilepsy. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but that's seizures that are triggered by a certain note, listening to a certain music note. That's kind of a different one that you don't hear too often about. They're called reflex epilepsy is what that is. And so it's just triggered by that note or that music.
Is that along the same lines as I remember in the 90s, there was someone, I think in England, who was having seizures to the sound of Mary Hart's voice on Entertainment Tonight?
I think it just depends on, it's on the person. Like I said, it's very individualized. And so sometimes it's something with like a high-pitched noise can sometimes, certain music that have high-pitched noises can sometimes cause a problem. And so it's very, like I said, it's very individualized, but and we hear different, you can hear different things from different people about what their reflex epilepsy is. And that just means those certain things, those triggers, like the water, like the light and the sound, church bells for some people. Sometimes it can even be a person's voice. And so there can be maybe a pitch that's within that person's voice. It's very rare, but but simple sound has been known to induce seizures.
This conversation just goes to show you how complex and in charge your brain is. It's pretty amazing that, you know, with something that, you know, we don't think about because, you know, it does its thing. I guess that's kind of one of the weird things is that sitting there thinking about the things that we don't think about our brain. So I find it interesting to, you know, have the conversation where you think about, you know, the function of your brain a little bit more than you would on your average day, thinking about the, you know, and unfortunately it has to be because of something that isn't pleasant for someone and can be life-threatening. But it's fascinating to think about how just, you know, a little firing of electricity in your brain can lead to so much. And, you know, it is amazing what we know and yet we don't know about what keeps us, mm-hmm. you know, keeps our brain functioning. It's a fascinating thing to think about. It's very paradoxical.
Definitely. And I guess it's just important to know, I think if you know someone or you know someone who you think is having seizures, if you, a lot of times when people take our first aid trainings, they may say, hey, I think I know someone that does that. I've seen somebody do that, or my brother does that. And it's always important to know that you go to the doctor and you get that followed up. I mean, you don't want to wait. The sooner you get treatment for epilepsy, the better outcome you have. If you go a long time without treatment, you know, and you're having seizures all the time, it can become a problem, because then you start to, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you can only drop a TV so many times before it doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work well anymore, right? It can work, but maybe just like, you know, you have to hit the side so that the static can go away, that thinking of older TVs. And so, so it's kind of, you know, that's the kind of thing
I would imagine
you look
for
at.
Just
and
simplicity's sake, you're frying your brain.
For, in a sense, but
you know,
maybe
it's not literally,
little,
and it's very
probably,
oversimplifying.
Exactly.
You know, I'm just a radio DJ. You guys are the medical people.
Yeah,
I'm just
okay.
A guy who talks into a microphone for a living, so it's my job to sum things up poorly.
Well, that's okay. And you know, you can have some issues with. You can also be at higher risk for early death. That's the other thing that people don't talk about. That's the thing that I think people need to be aware of, is that there is a condition called SUDEP, which is sudden unexplained death in epilepsy. And there is a risk. I mean, it's not a high risk, but it is a risk. And there is a risk in people with epilepsy. It's higher than the general population of, you know, dying earlier than a person without epilepsy. You have a higher risk of that. And SUDEP is a very unfortunate thing. It can happen. You know, I think the stat is 1 in every 1,000 people with epilepsy can die of SUDEP. And so it's definitely more often in people with poorly controlled epilepsy. So if you don't have real good control of your seizures, and you're at a higher risk, you need to be at a higher risk for SUDEP. And so it's one of those things that it's hard to talk about, and it's hard on the families. We do lots of events throughout Central and South Texas. We've just gone through a whole walk season where we had a walk to end epilepsy in Austin. We had one in Corpus Christi, San Antonio, and Edinburgh, and we've got some coming up in the spring as well. And at these walks, it's great to see our community, but it's also sad to see how many lives have been lost, and how many lives have been cut short because of epilepsy, because of SUDEP. And so it's definitely something that, you know, if you have someone out there, you're not sure, you know, talk to your doctor, ask what your risk is. What is your risk for that? You know, are you at high risk? And so, you know, SUDEP, you know, there's so much research going on into SUDEP right now. So it's not really known whether SUDEP can be prevented, but the best way is to lower your risk by controlling your seizures. So if you know that you're having breakthrough seizures because you are not avoiding all those triggers, you know, you're drinking and staying up all night and doing those kind of things, and you're increasing your risk because you're not controlling your seizures. And so it's kind of one of those important things to kind of remember that, that although, you know, it's not prevalent to die from epilepsy, it can happen. And 1 in 1,000 is that's a pretty high figure. It's a high enough figure to know that we hear more about more people dying than we should.
If you had a candy bowl full of a 1,000 pieces of candy and one of them was poison, would you grab one?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, doing what you can to make sure that your seizures are as controlled as possible. You know, if you're having active seizures and you're not, you know, on a good treatment regimen, make sure that you're getting in to see a specialist. Sometimes you may be just getting medicine from your family doctor, but you're still having a lot of seizures. It's good to get in to see a neurologist, because you really need to have that specialty care if you're still having seizures and that are not controlled by medicine. You definitely want to get in to see a neurologist to, you know, reduce that risk of seizures, reduce the risk of injury, and reduce the risk of death. And so it's kind of, you know, a good thing to know and talk to your doctor about, you know, what is my chance? What is my risk?
You can find out more of that information at efcst.org, Epilepsy Foundation of Central and South Texas. We are unfortunately up against the clock here, but I want to thank you very much for the information you have given us. And if you have any questions for them, you can reach out to them, as I said, at efcst.org. Kimberly Martin, the Assistant Director and Certified Cognitive Coach, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us. And remember, November is National Epilepsy Awareness Month, so wear your purple.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.